You're listening to the Soccer Report Extra podcast with your hosts, Bobby McMahon and Owen O'Callaghan.
Welcome to this week's Soccer Report Extra podcast. I'm Bobby McMahon. Alongside me is Owen O'Callaghan. And this week we have no adult supervision. Producer Luke Crawford is on his way back from Los Angeles after being at the MLS Cup Final. And that is where we start. MLS Cup Final, Los Angeles. Best team in the regular season. Arguably I think best team in postseason as well. So the right team won this one?
Oh, I think there can be absolutely no doubts. I was watching this, and after about 20 minutes of screaming furiously at my television, I realised...
Did the television scream back?
No, it didn't. I was hoping...
Did it just repeat after me, David Beckham is wonderful, David Beckham is wonderful? That's what? The TV I had.
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting. I had just kind of a grating UK voice repeatedly. That kind of sounded vaguely familiar from Saturday mornings. I don't know what was going on, but... It was kind of a weird setup. But after about 20 minutes, I realized how much patience you need to be an MLS coach. Because I was losing it. Yeah. I was losing it time after time when Houston would try to build an attack. It was so slow. And as runs were being made, runs weren't being picked out. Decision making was just so poor. Everything was mechanical. And after a while, you just kind of realize if Houston don't get something resembling a foothold in this game, this could be humiliating for them.
Yeah, and there was certainly all the chances, or vast majority of chances, fell Los Angeles' way, and particularly to Adam Grisman until he was substituted. I thought it was interesting, Chris Burchill coming on and Donovan being moved up front, and that really... It was an important part of the goal. Mm-hmm. But Chrisman had a number of clear-cut chances in the first half. One that Beckham put a free kick delivery, I think it was, on his head. And then there was a couple other ones that set up involving Donovan or Robbie Keane. And he just skied them. Generally had a poor, poor half.
Yeah. Because the longer the half went on, and the longer it remained at 0-0, you start to think about all those other games you've seen when one team's dominated for so long. Houston, who knows, they could get a little near post flick. Damn. You know, keeper makes a mess of it, suddenly they're leading by a goal to nil. As it turned out, they never got going.
They had one chance. That was Adam Moffat header, about this, just after the 60th minute maybe.
Yeah.
Just before Los Angeles got their goal. Mm-hmm. Nice cross from Ash, but he got up quite well. You wonder if Brian Ching had been on the end of that, would it have been differently? Would it have been different?
The other thing that springs instantly to mind is the one moment that Houston quickly or relatively quickly switched play from left to right. Ball was sent over to Danny Cruz. This is in the first half. Yeah. Danny Cruz cuts inside and gets a shot on target. Yeah. And it's a very simple save for Josh Saunders to make, but at least
it was something
to you know, say, okay, well, this may be a strategy that we can deploy. And that was it. Yeah. It happened once and never again.
Like De La Garza and Gonzalez just completely controlled Brian Ching, who got very little support. Kellen Carr was forced to forage deep.
Looking for scraps, wasn't
it? Yeah. Camargo and Moffat played very deep, as they did against Philadelphia as well. Mm-hmm. But I think that Los Angeles really stifled Ching and cut off his supply route. Carr works hard, but he's not got that spark that you would really be looking for in this kind of game to be able to spring a pass. Like he's very much get the ball heads down and get within 30 yards and let's see what I'm going to do now kind of player. So they were limited. Costley came on. He made very little difference.
Yeah.
It was just a flat. It was a flat performance, but it was a flat game as well. Conditions were not great.
Yeah.
Lot of rain in Los Angeles, but they didn't seem to have studs that could... The ground wasn't taking a stud.
A couple of people losing their footing, actually.
Yeah.
Which would point to possibly wearing the wrong studs. Yeah. But the pitch in general, for me, was a mess.
Yeah.
I mean, because...
It wasn't Wembley.
No.
69.
No.
First of the year show.
It was one of those moments where you're like, this is your international showpiece. You know, this is the one game that people from outside North America will stream online from somewhere else. You know, just because it's, you know, it sparks a bit of interest. And you saw what they were playing on.
Yeah.
And the pitch was cutting up after 10 minutes. And as much as, you know, if you get some rain before a game, you know, normally players look forward to it because, you know, it's nice, you know, the ball will be hitting the turf nicely and it adds to a little bit of pace. If anything, it slowed the bloody ball down.
Yeah,
it did. It was getting stuck in certain areas of the pitch.
Yeah. Just looking at anything tactically, it didn't strike me as being very innovative from either side.
The one thing that stood out for me was, now I'm not sure about Corey Ash.
That was his first. I went from what the information I had this morning when I went in and checked it, because I'd made a note last night and then followed up this morning, was that's actually the first game he started on the left side of midfield this year. He started as a right field midfield player, I think, two times, but he was pushed forward in the Brad Davis role. Wasn't there. Just didn't. I thought to some extent he was there to counter Donovan's run as well.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody could go. It was pacey enough to run with Landon Donovan, but.
Yeah.
It never really worked. He didn't have a bad game. I'm absolutely not pointing the finger at Corey Ash. Mm-hmm. It wasn't Brad Davis. He couldn't pick out the passes that Davis could pick out.
The thing that you know, I was hoping would you know maybe change as the game went on was, yeah, it's a final. I mean, if you get a ball in wide position, take your man on. Yeah. You know, put your man to the pin of his collar and show him what you have. And, you know, maybe just, you know, unsettle them a little bit. Nothing from either side. I mean, Danny Cruz never took on
very quiet
Donovan's and the same with Corey Ash on left side with Sean Franklin. Just, it was always come inside, look to play pass.
Yeah.
But there was no overlap. They never continued runs.
You look at, like, Moffitt's passing stats and Camargo's passing stats are very impressive. Mm. They're up there, and I think Camargo's in the 90s and adding Moffitt's up there as well. Actually, I have it someplace. Let me double-check
you
that.
Really
Adam
not.
Moffitt, 82%. Camargo, 91%. Now, Moffitt made 72 attempts. Camargo was only 23, but most of it was pretty conservative passing.
Yeah.
So I think the stats perhaps don't tell the full story there.
We talked on Friday's Fox Soccer Reports. Obviously, the kind of story. There was two stories from Houston's perspective going into this game. One was no Brad Davis, and the other was their ability from set pieces.
Yeah.
One corner,
one free kick. They had the free kick, remember the first half, when I think Cruz was taken down just on the edge of the penalty.
Yeah,
area,
for the handball. Was
it a handball? You're right, yes. It was Gonzalez handball, yes.
And it was
cross.
Right on the edge of the area.
It was, yeah.
I didn't realise that how close it was.
That would have been Brad Davis territory.
Yeah.
It really was a left foot.
Post and
yeah. That was the kind of situation you're dying for a left foot player to take that one on, because right foot, when it's that tight, it's going to be pretty hard to get the header away.
Yeah. That was one thing from the Houston performance that I mean, I always come out, you know, to finals and, you know, bring it back to underage when a coach always tells you in the dressing room beforehand, leave everything on the pitch. Don't come back with regrets. And, you know, if this was Houston's final performance, you'd have to feel very disappointed that, you know, they never got going. But also, they never tried to push for their strengths.
Well,
they never tried to get it out wide so that you could force corners.
Even when it was, even at 1-0 down, there was nothing there. Mm. You know, there was no grand finale, there was no great push, there was no getting the ball for, let's see, cause some havoc in the penalty area.
Yeah.
It was, we talked about this on Friday night, 1-0 Los Angeles. Well, 10 up to Sunday, and now it's 11.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 11th 1-0 win of the season. And maybe really pretty emblematic of the other 1-0. You talked about this on Friday, when we're just professional, solid, get the goal, hang on, and it really should have been more than 1-0.
Yeah.
One on the chances, but you look at Robbie Keane's goal; it was disallowed. That was frankly, it was a wrong call, wasn't it?
It was a wrong call.
Yeah,
completely. I mean, he's level.
You know, if you're looking at his arm being offside, but you don't look at your arm being offside.
Because the thing is that the linesman stuck his flag up straight away.
Yeah.
So he was adamant.
But he wasn't in line either.
You know, he wasn't.
He was about a yard and a half off.
And also, like, the thing is that, listen, they altered the offside rule a number of years ago, where it was, if there's a benefit of the doubt, it goes with the attacker.
But now you've got me on something, right? But the commentators, this is a commentator's one. Well, if it's a benefit of the doubt, you know, well, there might have been doubt in your mind, but obviously it wasn't in the linesman's mind,
right? Yeah.
And he wouldn't have given it that way.
Yeah.
It's like, Well, because there's a benefit doubt in your mind, then automatically there's a benefit doubt in everybody's mind.
Yeah.
Well, not actually, because the commentator's job is there, and we tend to forget this at time, is to instill some controversy and perhaps excitement into the game that's somewhat lacking.
Yes.
So you've got this constant drive to try and find controversy when in reality, many times it doesn't exist. And the commentator we had on Sunday is actually kind of well known for that.
Here's one for you. Should David Beckham have been sent off? Firstly, he went in studs up.
Yeah, that was early in the second half, wasn't it?
That should have been a yellow card. And then late on, when Houston were driving from midfield, he rugby tackled
Costly.
It was Carlos Costly.
Yeah.
And he got a booking for that.
Yeah. Now, in the sliding, in bringing sliding doors into this, would he have attempted the second one if he'd got the first yellow card?
That's true.
Don't think so, eh?
You would have think he just would have left it?
Yeah.
That's certainly a way of looking at it. Yeah. When he wasn't booked for the first one, I was very, very surprised. Because the one when
the referee didn't want to spoil the game.
Oh God! And here's a player whose leg is mangled in 17 pieces. I'm not going to send you off because I don't want to destroy the game. All right. So I'm just retaining my professionalism here. But since we've opened the
Beckham
worms,
door,
let's talk about Beckham.
Okay, let's get it out. We'll set the scene. Owen's position is Beckham was the best player in the park. I felt he was distinctly average. And perhaps, I will admit something, Owen, perhaps my view of him being distinctly average was I felt myself pushed into that corner by the absolute Basil Fawlty-like commentary we got of licking Beckham's rear.
Oh!
You know, at some point there's other players in the park. And, you know, maybe he wasn't... I'm not saying he was a bad... He played badly. But I don't think he was that great. I don't think he was worthy of the incessant arse-kissing.
I certainly don't think that he was... That, you know, you need to pull out the dictionary of superlatives every time that Beckham picks up a ball. Oh, my God! That six-yard pass that Beckham played to Sean Franklin, the direction, the pace on that ball, it was just inch perfect. That Bobby McMahon, is why this guy's in our league.
That was the warm-up one.
Oh, right. Sorry about that. That's fine. Come back to us after the break for more David Beckham analysis. Vertical sidekick.
Just, I take your point that statistics, and I made the same point on the weekend, and got a tweet back from EPL Stats Index when they pointed out that Peter Cech and one other player were the only two players in the Chelsea side in the first half with 100% passing stats. And I made a point on my tweet that just shows you how wrong stats can be, considering Cech put Mikel right into it, deep, with that ridiculous goal kick and sloppiness. So it doesn't always tell the tale, but 10 free kick opportunities and corner kick opportunities for David Beckham. One he put on Chrisman's head, but it slided off the edgy part.
Yeah.
And the other one late on, the save from Tally Hall at the corner, which really wasn't that difficult a save, actually. He didn't leave his feet. Yeah, it was okay, but it wasn't spectacular. And all the rest were either cleared or blocked. So there was nothing else. That was the 10, because I decided that was going to be one of the stories. I assumed it was going to be one of the stories of the cup final. And he's part, particularly Beckham. It was very easy to track the Houston one.
Yeah.
I could do that on the fingers of one hand and still have many over. But his passing stats, 57%. Only Saunders and Gonzalez on Los Angeles Galaxy had a poorer passing percentage than David Beckham last night, according to OptiStats.
Yeah, but how many passes did he attempt?
About 75, I think it was. So you look at Adam Moffat, he had 72.
It's all right. Yeah, but who won the game?
I'm not saying that.
I'm just trying to drum up the boredom of the podcast by finding controversy in certain things.
I guess what the point I'm trying to make is, and I go back to it, he was not as good as he was being made out to be. Now, he did let one ball slide off his head that led to the goal.
Oh, now, See, this is harsh, okay? There's no need for this. Do you write for the LA Times?
Oh, did you read that? That was in Raves and Rants. TJ Summers?
There's a couple of them. There's another guy this morning who...
Is there?
This is Monday morning we're recording the podcast, and I had the misfortune of coming across his review of the MLS Cup last night from a Beckham perspective. Was he really worth it? Did he really justify the $32 million yesterday? Did he? he's only been here for a fleeting moment of time. Now he's pissing off somewhere else. Is it really worth it?
See, what you've stumbled on there, Owen, is one of the problems I've got with the Raves and Rants every week. Because on the Rants one, the real idiot pieces that I find, I'm torn because I realise that every time I link to them, it's a hit. And two, I'm actually giving some credence to their opinion. It's a dilemma for me, believe me.
It kind of irritates me because, you know what? You particularly come in and you analyse the game quite forensically at every opportunity that you get. And then you have to pick up... Like, the LA Times is a very influential newspaper.
Yeah.
Like, there are people getting up...
It's published
morning.
In Los Angeles, apparently.
The City of Angels.
I thought it was Angles.
Angle.
Yeah. Which we'll talk about Swansea later.
Angle. particularly, yes. The old Angle. Sounds like a dance.
Zaragoza.
Zaragoza. Valencia. Real Zaragoza. The Angle Wrangle sounds like a dance. If the Man City fans have the Poznan to celebrate goals, maybe Swansea's supporters should do the Angle Wrangle. Anyway, we're getting slightly off topic. More Angle Wrangle.
So you think you can dance now?
But what were we talking about? Yes, LA Times.
Yes, LA Times. Yeah. Influential in Los Angeles.
The people are having their morning coffee today going, that Beckham's a bit shit, isn't he? Because they're after reading this complete dirge. I thought Beckham had a great game. I don't know how Landon Donovan ended up with the MVP.
Well, I do. I thought he was much more decisive.
You think?
I thought he drove and actually tried to make some... I thought he was more...
Beckham's not going to drive, though.
No, exactly. He's got somebody to drive for him.
I just think this is heading into dangerous territory.
You
Donovan
think so?
Scored a good goal.
Do you think our friendship may end over Beckham?
Certainly not. Okay. It'll end over Arsene Wenger.
Or Angel Rangel.
Angel. Also, hang on a second.
Yes.
The biggest story is this. If you picked up every newspaper before the MLS Cup final, he's on his way.
Yes. Just a minute. It's if you picked up the newspapers this morning and you looked at the websites this morning, a number of them, Los Angeles Galaxy have been rebranded.
Oh.
They've been renamed.
Oh.
They're Beckham's Los Angeles Galaxy.
Ah. I didn't get that press release.
No, I missed that one too.
Yeah, they kept it quiet.
Yeah, they
I thought
did.
They would have made a bit more fanfare of it. Is that kind of like Sporting Direct Arena?
Yeah.
It's naming rights. David Beckham will pay them $40 million a year.
Beckham.com.
Very good. Bex.com. Bex with an X.
On his way. Is he on his way? Do you think he's on his way? We don't know. Nobody knows.
I read a piece in
the I guess somebody knows.
By Lawrence Donegan in The Guardian. And the headline was basically, Beckham says farewell. Well,
he's one of your boys, isn't he?
I thought Lawrence Donegan.
He's Irish, isn't he?
Is he Irish?
Sounds Irish. Maybe he's Glasgow.
I thought he was Scottish.
Maybe he's one of mine.
I thought he was Scottish.
Oh, well.
He's one of your chaps.
Could be.
Normally he writes about golf, but found himself in LA to cover MLS Cup.
He's done a few columns.
Yeah. And the headline of the piece was, you know, Beckham says farewell with MLS showdown.
I think he is off.
You think he's gone?
I think he's going. I don't think Los Angeles Galaxy would be particularly disturbed with him going, to be honest. You look at the money they've spent. He's done his 5 years.
Yeah.
He's not going to get any better. So why would you invest in it again? He's beginning to look like one of these players that just don't know when to quit either.
I look at it this way.
He's going to captain the... Is he going to captain the British team?
I'd imagine
he
will.
Isn't that a farce?
Oh, it is. But you have to remember, and this is the thing. This is the thing what I can't understand about these reports. Talking about Beckham leaving the Galaxy, and kind of as people are attempting to pay tribute or criticise Beckham's 5 years in Major League Soccer, they think that David Beckham was...
Polarising force, isn't he?
Yes. They think that David Beckham was brought to Major League Soccer to be a player. Which I'm kind of...
Or a clothes horse.
I don't know how they can believe that. As in, oh, well, they've only won one MLS Cup since he got here. What a failure.
But don't they choose how to portray that as well at various times? Like, they just jump from one side of the line to the other. So maybe when it suits them, it's substantiated or criticised basically on on-field performance.
Yeah.
And if it's not, they jump to the other side, which is, well, what's he really done for the league?
What's Billy Beane says about supporters? That, you know, they always ask, what have you done for me lately?
Yeah.
They kind of forget. Because the one thing is, I know for a fact...
Well, sanitation and roads...
Yeah, but really.
Yeah, what have they done for us lately?
You know what I mean? Education, justice,
bloody Romans,
law reform. but really, outside of all that, what have you done? I know for a fact, a lot of people back home in Ireland streaming MLS Cup to catch it.
It's because Robbie's here.
Because Robbie was playing.
Yeah. Think they caught the interview after?
Wait, I hope not. The monosyllabic interview.
The Brad Pitt interview.
Yeah. No, it's too easy to go and do it, isn't it? But the reason Robbie Keane plays for the LA Galaxy, because David Beckham plays for the LA Galaxy.
True.
But now Thierry Henry plays for the New York Red Bulls. It's because David Beckham.
Because David Beckham doesn't.
You go through it. I mean, the guy has opened the doors.
He should go up at a level. The one I have the problem with is the portrayal of Beckham was somehow brought over to save the league or to make it a mainstream sport. The bottom line is MLS and soccer in North America, is it the level of NFL? Obviously not. Is it the same as baseball? Obviously not, although it's making inroads. But the bottom line is it's got deep roots. It's got a fan culture now, which I think is beginning to feed off itself. It isn't going any place. Mm-hmm. Soccer is not going to be decimated with David Beckham leaving or anybody else leaving.
No, nope.
Like there's, you know, how you assess the deep roots that soccer now has in terms of the last 20 years, starting with the US qualification for the 1990 World Cup, which apparently was 22 years ago this weekend when they went to Trinidad and Tobago.
That is a great excuse for people out there to look up online the official United States video for their trip to the World Cup in 1990. It features lots of mullets and lots of really very weird guy-to-guy touching.
Yeah,
but shirtless touching.
You should actually go and look at it for Paul Caligiuri's goal in Trinidad instead, because that's much more memorable, really.
Well, see, that's the difference between you and me.
It really is a quite spectacular and amazing goal, and perhaps one that had fate written all over it. But anyway, so over the 22 years.
Speaking of amazing, Tony Meola's mullet, equally as amazing in that video.
Yes.
So, anyway.
TMZ from Owen here. All you need is standing over the partitions.
Why do they always do that? Oh,
that show drives me up the wall.
Just take a seat. It's all right.
Not that I watch it. Not my wife watch it, but you tend to flick through at night. Yeah. What's on, what's on, what's on. And they drive me nuts.
They've got an Irish guy in it now.
Have they?
Yeah, he's one of their...
But there's an Irish guy on Glee as well.
And we're all over the place. There's an Irish guy on Fox Soccer Report, apparently.
Why is there an Irish guy on Glee? There's an Irish guy on Glee because Fox Soccer Report's got an Irish guy on.
The thing is... The guy, what really bothers me is like when there's an Irish character in something, they're always called Timmy O'Toole. Seamus or Leprechaun. You know what I mean?
A Ricochet.
Well, Ricochet is actually the name of a broadcaster in Ireland. That's kind of pretty weird. It kind of shows you that you can't really dispute the stereotype.
We're going to be on patio furniture soon.
Yeah. Yes, patio furniture. There you go. But anyway,
where do we go?
We're on
22 years ago.
No,
yes, we go back over the 22 years, and not to even imply somehow that there wasn't soccer before that with the NASL, and you go back through some of the great history books that have been written about US soccer down the years. There was deep roots in certain points where, with a couple other decisions, the game could have been very much mainstream. Didn't happen. It lost its edge. You know, I think you can see that thing that see that in a number of sports. That the opportunity was there, it didn't take, and it just kind of faded away. But you know, it's not a case of Beckham saved the league or Beckham made the league, you know, tremendously popular. It's just another step in the evolution, and it continues to. There's more fans every year. More people are watching it. Yes, you know, it's not the Barclays Premier League. It's not the Bundesliga. But as Simon Cooper pointed out in Soccernomics, eventually it's going to work. You've got a population base, and you've got roots. It might not be in my lifetime, but eventually it will. It will come. It will be. The United States leagues will be one of the United States, whatever league is in the United States, and whether it's the United States league in Canada or whether Mexico is into it as well, eventually it will be one of the top 10 leagues in the world, probably 5 leagues in the world.
Wrapping up our MLS discussion.
That's what we're talking about, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's
the
where
cup
we
final.
Off.
Yeah,
we fit in a lot.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. LA deserve champions.
Yes. Can they repeat though?
That's just what I was going to ask you.
Oh, okay.
This is one thing that's one of the reasons why I think Beckham will stay.
Yeah.
Just because, firstly, he's got a young family who are all in school. And
who are all young.
Who are all, you know.
Do they speak, any of them speak French?
Well, see, this is the thing. I mean, why bring your
and
family?
And Victoria's not
going
to allow him to go to Paris on his own, is he? Is she?
Well, people
not are after the little Real Madrid sojourn.
What are you suggesting there?
Things
happened there in Madrid.
Things happened.
Yeah. Also, I hope that he's better at French than Joe Cole is. Did you hear his post game comment?
No.
I did a Bond match for my L'Equipe, and it was good to play. That was it. His post game comments.
Did he speak louder?
Probably spoke probably a little bit later.
And announce himself.
Yeah, a little bit more.
Enunciation.
So
you think Beckham's going to stay PSG? I think it'd be a daft move.
But also, he's 36 years old. Does he think he'll be starting for PSG?
That's the other thing.
I mean, what's he there? What's the best thing he can win? A league and championship?
Could go to QPR.
He could win lots there.
It's so silly, isn't it?
Isn't it?
It is.
You're 36. Make sure that you'll captain Britain at the Olympic Games next year.
Go out. In a blaze of glory, saying this is my last season, if you're going to do it at all.
If you're going to do it.
Yeah.
And I just think that he seems to be very happy living where he lives. There's no need for him. They've had a new child. Why uproot all your family and move into a different country, different culture, and have to be accepted again? I mean, you're 36. I mean,
well, it's no coincidence that his best season has been when he stopped hopping back and forth across the Atlantic because of England.
Yeah, that's true.
Or Milan.
Milan catwalk.
I saw a very good comment. I think maybe can't remember where this one came from.
Not from me anyway, that's for sure. I don't think
you made the comment. But it really said that, you know, he's kind of shown what he's capable of doing to a much greater extent this year, and perhaps in retrospect regrets sort of hopping back and forward, particularly the loan deals, to try and the chasing this England spot.
Yeah.
Which I thought it was an interesting angle to it.
I didn't mind the loan deals too much. For instance, yeah. Like, at least we forget, Landon Donovan went to Everton.
Yeah, for
directly before the World Cup.
Yeah, for 8 weeks, so.
Yeah.
Remember, Beckham was more than...
He was more.
Yeah, because he stayed, and it just disrupted this total. I think that was bad. It looked bad. It was bad optics. And
It was.
It was bad. It was bad for Los Angeles Galaxy, particularly when they're trying to sell them around the league. So I'd think that's a bit of a stain on it. It's one of these things. I got a tweet this morning from somebody asking, well, what about the how many MLS players can you see going to Europe, in particular Los Angeles ones? Bottom line is, with Champions League, CONCACAF Champions League starting so early, and MLS season starting pretty early as well, you look at it, you can only go to Europe come January 1.
Yeah.
If you get more than 4 or 5 games, then you'd be doing pretty well, I think.
Mm. Well, Robbie Keane has already ruled out going on a loan move.
Yeah.
He's going to stay put.
Yeah, I can understand going to train.
Yeah.
Well, here's a question for you. I had this little discussion on Twitter last week. The people, Salgado going to Fulham. It was being reported in some places, I won't say necessarily the press, because some of them were websites, that Salgado was going on trial to Fulham. And the point I made is there's a significant difference between going training with a team and being on trial. Am I being too pedantic or...
No.
I think there's a critical difference here.
Well, I mean, One, when you're Thierry Henry currently training with Arsenal. Does that mean he's been trialed at Arsenal?
Yeah.
Robert Pires trained with Arsenal before moving to Aston Villa.
Like, that's just when you're on trial, there's the semblance of a deal has already been...
Yeah, you're out to prove something.
Yeah, and the club that owns your registration at that point is given the thumbs up to, if you can make it, we're willing to sell you kind of thing.
Training is just for experience purposes.
Exactly.
And if you, essentially, for a professional soccer player, it's about kind of networking.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that, you know, it means that you're surrounding yourself with the right people to be acquainted with.
I don't see it being any different in terms of, as you point out, networking. Mm. But a significant difference in the dynamics of what constitutes the foot in the door for a move as opposed to foot in the door going, it's been nice.
Yeah, and also I think for it's almost like a calling card of sorts for players. That, I mean, if they come over from MLS, train for 2 weeks, and they buzz around the place and they're a good positive influence, coaches might be persuaded to take a more in-depth look at them and then formalise.
Or keep an eye on them.
Exactly.
Get an option on them,
yeah,
which is another way as well. Mm-hmm. Because going in that time in January, I don't know. You know, I know there's a lot of very different views on January transfers, but not many work out, do they? I think the only positive about a January transfer is it gives you a bedding down period, so you hit the summer and the pre-season training perhaps more acclimatised in terms of how the team goes about things.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Dzeko would be an example of that this year. Didn't have a great January to May last year, but paying off this year.
That's true. I'll always bring it back to Patrice Evra and Nemanja Vidic when they moved in January to United.
Evra, perhaps the worst debut ever known to man.
It literally took them a couple of months to click properly. So it's a very turbulent period to try out for a new side.
So that brings us to an end of MLS season. We will now sit back and enjoy the vast amounts of draft articles that will emanate from sites in North America that will thousands of millions of column inches telling us what comes down to very little.
Nothing. We'll have the big super draft.
The super draft, expansion draft.
First.
Yeah, and when you get right down to it, doesn't really mean very much.
Not a lot of these players. Unfortunately.
Take the first couple and that's it. But certainly nothing that substantiates the amount of column inches.
It's just North American sport culture, isn't it? The draft. It's always been this massive.
The reality is very different than how it's portrayed in the context of MLS.
Yeah.
You go through the number of players that actually make an impact and you get these reams and reams of columns suggesting so-and-so is going to sign this player because they need strength at fullback. Oh, give me a break. Anyway, Swansea.
Yes.
Manchester United. We're not going to get a chance to talk about that tonight. Let's
tonight
talk about
being on the Fox
Soccer
Report.
Actually, it won't be tonight. It'll be last night.
This
is up on Tuesday night. Swansea, Manchester United. 1-0 Manchester United. One mistake by Swansea. Get punished. Manchester United. Step in the right direction. Step sideways. Step back.
It was much of a muchness, really, wasn't it? It was just kind of a side going through the motions. It was early goal. Grand. We'll be fine here.
Yeah,
and just head through the game. Wasn't a very memorable game.
I thought I quite enjoyed it actually. I thought the ball movement was good. I thought Swansea passed the ball very well, with the exceptions of Giggs and Nani. I thought United actually moved the ball pretty well as well. Nani and Giggs, I thought, were pretty putrid, apart from Giggs setting up the goal.
Yeah,
but that was hand on a plate by Angel Rangel. But Scott Sinclair hadn't decided not to make himself, it would have been. You know, certainly a great opportunity for an equaliser there. I want to say, word association. Patrice Evra roasting. What do you think of? I think of Nathan
Dyer. Interestingly enough, Evra taken off. People always taken off because he's got a booking.
No, he was taken off because everybody was feeling sorry for him.
He was dealt a harsh lesson.
He was. Nathan Dyer just gave him a hiding.
Hey, listen, it comes back to. You used to play fullback. You still play fullback on occasion.
Okay.
What's the worst thing that you hate coming up against?
Speedy little shitty winger.
There you go. Thank you very much. And when you have one on your hands, you're like, oh, yeah.
Fortunately, you don't come across many of them in my league anymore.
Formerly speedy
wingers. Yes, formerly, many years ago.
Yes.
Yes.
But it just goes to show you, like we were talking about.
If you give them space and the ability to push the ball past you, anybody who's got more space than you, you just can't let them do it. And Dyer, the one thing Swansea have got, and you know, we were talking about Scott Sinclair before we came on the air here, and certainly he's still got a lot of learnings to harden that pace, and he can be quite a good finisher, but he's. I think Swansea are going to have to be patient with him and work with him because he's some of his default moves, checking inside on that right when basically it doesn't work all that well.
Yeah.
But you've got Dyer, you've got Sinclair, you've got some pace in that team. You've got some pace in the midfield as well. Leon Britton, I thought, a tremendous game. And Mark Gower, although he faded late in the game, tremendous, tremendous range of passing.
Mm-hmm. Brendan Rodgers, as a coach, is doing himself... a lot of good this season.
Yeah,
the way that you set this Swansea side up.
Well, building on the Roberto Martinez legacy and Paulo Sousa to some extent as well.
Yeah,
but he's like I honestly can't see that Swansea team going down
if they continue with this. You know, the one thing you always worry about with promoted teams is they get injuries.
It's interesting though. I guess that's a good point on the injury factor may come in because you don't know that really you have a sense of the depth of the pool.
Yeah.
But if they can avoid injury, you know, you go back over the years, you get a sense, I have a sense anyway, that some of the other teams that started well, you felt they were playing above themselves. I get the feeling that Swansea actually play within themselves.
Yeah.
I don't feel like they're overachieving or anything. Ashley Williams, sorry, he's just one of the better centre-halves in the league.
Mm.
He is a real gem of a centre-half. He passes the ball very, very well. Obviously, Swansea play out from the back, but he reads the game very well. He's a bit of a rock in terms of the way Swansea set up at the back. I just thought, you know, Monk's not bad, but Ashley Williams, I thought, in the games I've seen this year, has really been a real standout.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, I think I had Swansea tipped to go down. I think a lot.
But that's fair. That's a fair call for anybody because we... You saw over the years, promoted teams
just find it
nine
tough.
Times out of ten have struggled.
Yeah, but no, as you said, I mean the one thing about sides that aren't familiar with Premier League and how it works is that you know you get a bad result, then suddenly you get three bad results.
Yeah,
then it's very difficult to stop a slide.
Yeah,
and suddenly you're in the bottom three.
Yeah.
But Swansea, I mean, they got hiding on their opening day, dust themselves down a little bit.
Yeah, and that, even back. That was only in the last. When you get down to the last 30 minutes, it's the last 30 minutes, so we're holding out quite well to about the hour mark.
They've got an absolute treasure of a goalkeeper in Michel Vorm.
Yes, looking good for $2.5 million in the fantasy football pool.
Because it took them a long time
pre-season
to find
their keeper, didn't it? De Vries went to Wolves.
Because Hanneman moved on.
That's right. De Vries is backing up
Wayne Hennessy.
Wayne Hennessy, exactly. So yes, they didn't. So it's not like this is a tried and tested goalkeeper as far as Swansea are concerned.
Yeah.
But yeah, they signed him quite late, I think, in the window,
late
didn't
it
they?
Happened because
was it Utrecht he played for?
Certainly. Why do I think Twente for some reason?
Okay.
I'm not sure. Off the top of my head. But
some of the listeners will know.
Yeah, some of the listeners, if you call yourself analysts.
Yeah. What do you get paid for?
Yeah, everyone knows the Eredivisie.
You're supposed to get paid?
I got paid. Did you not get paid?
You getting paid?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I get paid for saying stuff like this. This podcast brought to you in relation with Continental Tires. I thought that stuff for the ESPN was hilarious. You know, like... And it's gone out for a corner. It's a corner to the Dynamo. Coverage of this game brought to you by Continental Tires.
What was the other one? Was it Hot Pockets? Or Hot... You're in Los Angeles. Yes, it's raining. You're going to need Hot Pockets.
This corner kick brought to you by my coffee cup.
Yeah.
This is brought to you by anyone who gave us any money.
Yeah, my favourite was TSN in Canada, who ran three adverts at half time reminding us to tune in to the MLS Cup final.
Oh dear!
But we didn't get the Sportsnet. Seeing it was on TSN, we didn't have the benefit of the Sportsnet. Barry White Love Unlimited Orchestra.
certainly not the Electric Light Orchestra. the not electric heavy orchestra. Yeah. I think.
Anyway, how did this get going? Also getting paid. Oh, Utrecht.
Michel Vorm.
Yes, that's it. Yes.
There you go.
And what a good buy he's been.
Yeah, he's been really, really solid. And for fantasy football.
That's maybe something to do. We're looking for ideas as we get to Christmas and New Year, because you're going to head home, right? And I've got some holidays coming as well. So yes, we're going to have to stock up with some stuff on the podcast. So maybe that's...
You're giving all our secrets away.
Well, maybe we come up with some of the best buys of the season.
Underrated 11.
Yeah, I think I'd prefer to be positive rather than negative. You know, there's maybe so many of the pieces out there. It's Berba flop.
That's an imaginative one. Yeah. They worked long.
They did, yes.
Long hours coming up with that. Berba flop. Did you see what they did there?
Oh, I know, it was very clever. Oh. Very clever.
See, that's where they get paid, the big bucks.
The big bucks, as opposed to us.
Yes.
We get pocket money.
We got hot pocket money. We barely missed the drums.
Yeah,
here.
We're
on location.
Flying back from Los Angeles, not knowing what we're up to here. Anyway, so Swansea, they lost, first home defeat this season. Michael Carrick.
First start.
And 96 passes he attempted, 92 on the target. It was very much Michael Carrick's kind of game, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah. Elsewhere, it was kind of Phil Jones hit the post later on after another one of those surging runs.
Just and very quickly before I came out this morning, I was just a quick look at the Guardian. Michael Cox had some very interesting chalkboard on Wayne Rooney's passing.
Ooh.
And the impact of perhaps dropping Rooney further back and how it's made him a little bit more conservative, but a more reliable passer of the ball. So if you get a chance, look that up. It was on Monday's chalkboards in The Guardian. Mm. But it was quite interesting, I thought.
Do you want to talk Champions League?
Yeah, we should, shouldn't we? Because this is you're going to hear this on Tuesday. And I'm just desperately looking for my notes here. So let's talk very quickly about Tuesday's Champions League. Round 5. I think round 5 is kind of one of the more interesting rounds.
True.
Because you've got teams who are in a position where they can wrap things up and make round 6 a dead rubber match. But if you don't get the result in round 5, all things become possible in round 6, and it can become quite nervy, can it?
Well, it's, you know...
You're supposed to agree with me there.
I mean, 100%, 110%.
And my name's not Ian.
Oh, sorry about that. Let's talk Group A.
Yeah. So, Group A, Bayern Munich, who lost to Borussia Dortmund. I think we're going to talk about that on Monday night on the Fox Soccer Report.
Last night,
yeah. We're going to talk about that last night. Tense getting mixed up there.
Sound like Darkie. Oh, I can't say that.
Bayern Munich, Manchester City, Napoli, Villarreal. Munich sitting there with 10 points. City with 7, Napoli with 5. Bayern need a draw.
Yep.
They go through. And would qualify should Napoli fail to beat Manchester City. And just in case you're recognising some of this verbiage, it's taken from, I have to put my hand up here and admit, it's part of Reuters news release, but it's very helpful looking at a rundown of the chances. So can City go to Napoli and win? Bigged up at the moment, aren't they?
Well, you know what? They certainly would fancy their chances.
Well, 800 million, you should have a good chance.
You should. And what? However many hundreds of million in debt from last year.
Yes. You say it quick, it doesn't sound very much.
No. They can't certainly go to Italy and win. But it's...
You've got to think, you look at their last two fixtures, though, they're in a good position. Because even Napoli beat them. They got Bayern Munich at home.
And Bayern will probably be
and
already
Bayern, you think, are going to beat, because they're playing Villarreal at home. So Bayern should be through anyway.
On 13 points. We're giving Munich 13 points.
Yeah. And so therefore, and Bayern have to come to Etihad Stadium.
Eastlands.
I think we should call it Eastlands.
Main Road.
Yeah,
yes,
Main Road. Now we're talking about a ground. So City...
The main ground.
Certainly do themselves a massive favour, but it's potentially setting up a tricky situation. But Bayern Munich, as we pointed out on Friday, no Schweinsteiger, collarbone break?
Yeah, 6 weeks.
Yeah, they dropped Toni Kroos back into that position, but Dortmund, Bayern Munich on Saturday, watched the
just
game.
Just dented their confidence a little bit, haven't they?
Oh my goodness, talk about a game played at 1,000 miles an hour, or 1,600 kilometres an hour, if you're looking
well
at the
there.
Metric. Yeah.
Yes.
So anyway, that's Group A. So I think, you know, come what may, on Tuesday in Napoli. City are still positioned quite well. I guess Villarreal. Could Villarreal be the first Spanish side to go 0-6?
Villarreal, even domestically.
Yeah.
It is awful.
Yeah, it's kind of one of these glass ceiling situations again, isn't it?
So we are tipping City to go to Napoli and win?
No, I think I'll tip City to go there and draw.
But still progress.
I think they'll progress.
I think I said that at the start of Champions League that City would not make it through the group stage.
Yeah. You shouldn't be admitting these things. You just...
If Napoli beat them.
True, it makes it a little bit...
Napoli v Real in their last game.
I guess it's one of these... That's true.
A lot hinges. As you said, on it's round 5, right?
Like, so, you know, the things that would really throw this group into turmoil would be if Napoli beat City and Villarreal beat Bayern Munich. Then it'd be very tricky. Because Bayern Munich would be sitting there, actually. Wouldn't be a bad result for Bayern Munich, actually, because they've got a 2-goal edge on City in terms of the head-to-head, don't they? The 1-2-0. Anyway, that's pontification from us. But on to Group B. Inter Milan lost their first game to Trabzonspor. Trabzonspor, yes. I always want to say something different there.
Trapeze.
The Turkish lads. CSK Moscow,
no, it's not.
5 points. Trabzonspor, 5 points. And Lille sitting at 2. That's got to be a disappointment, doesn't it? Even though they lost a few players.
For French side?
Yeah. Well, for a team that's got Eden Hazard.
And Joe Cole.
I forgot about Joe Cole.
Misuso.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is certainly disappointing. But
what a Bond player he is.
Outside of... What was that?
What a Bond player he is.
He's a Bond player. This is actually turning into a Bond podcast.
Yes. So here's somebody, the qualifying chances. Inter need a draw to be sure of advancing to the last 16. Even if they lose, they would still qualify as long as they'll beat CSKA. CSKA would qualify if they win and Trabzonspor lose to Inter. Inter are through here, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
Can't see it. Not happening. Four-point lead, 2 games to go. Even Inter can't blow this one.
Oh. You've put the hex on them now.
Did you see that goal they got on the weekend?
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Yeah?
Mota, don't think it was a handball, but clearly offside.
Oh, God.
Ooh, it was brutal.
Also, going to Turkey, which usually carried with it this kind of mass... Ooh, you've got to go to Turkey.
A wet Tuesday night in Turkey.
The same way that they have to go to Cyprus. Oh, they have to go to Greece.
I love the ones. I heard one. I can't place it specifically. But it was a colour commentator who was pointing out that, you know, you're going, it's a tricky place to go to, and then rattled off the fact they'd only won once in about 10 games or something, and then try to backpedal on it.
My point is, for people who are Inter Milan fans, going to Turkey now doesn't really hold the same sort of permutations as it did a couple of years ago.
No. What you actually see is when you go to Turkey and Greece, their results are better at home,
but
they're still not great.
And you probably can get a lot for your money. On that,
the money just goes a little bit further, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it? You could probably buy Turkey or Greece.
Well, when you consider Trabzonspor actually got knocked out in the second round of qualifying and then backdoored it through Fenerbahce's problems.
Yes.
It was Fenerbahce, wasn't it? Turkey that had the problem?
Yes.
I think it was,
yeah.
So, Trabzonspor have won only 2 of 7 matches against Italian teams, both against Inter. One back in 83-84 and the second one earlier this season. Blah, 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 Inter go through. Who go through with them? Think Trabzonspor can do it, or do you think CSKA? I kind of fancy CSKA.
Do you?
Yeah. I quite like Russian football.
So do I.
Yeah, I like watching it when I get a chance.
Yeah, I like CSKA.
Yeah.
I like their chances.
You know what I particularly like? Early games from Russia on Tuesday, Wednesdays.
You're just a nerd, aren't you?
Sorry, but I do. I just love the idea of cramming in that extra game.
You're a sad man.
It's, you know, we get another one. I think it's Wednesday. Zenit are at home to Apoel.
Oh.
Early game.
Yeah.
Bonus.
You are.
Big bonus.
A crazy person. Apoel, the old Cypriots.
Well, Apoel could go through. We're not going to touch Wednesday yet, but.
No. Wouldn't touch it with barge pole. Who's got a barge pole? Where did that phrase come from?
Is that a barge pole in your pocket? You're just glad to see me. That's where. No,
from the sublime to the
I don't
ridiculous.
Think we should be going here. Anyway, so CSK are at home to Lille. I think there's a real chance at CSK would be my favourites
to
go through.
This is a match day really for CSK to just pick up that win and then Inter maybe to get something.
Here's an interesting stat. You see this one? Courtesy of Reuters.
See it. Oh, I just was looking at that a few moments ago.
Okay, over to you.
Sedu Dumbia has scored 11 goals in 11 European games for his club in the past two seasons.
That's pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah.
He came from Young Boys, I think, didn't he?
You know a lot about Young Boys.
Don't start that rumour again.
We spent a bit of time in Penn State there before this
Josh, you're going to get us banned from the airways and we'll have a content. We'll have to put a content warning up on
as
the
we
podcast.
Said, as we said.
Because we're on Stitcher this week, remember?
Oh, this is our... I shouldn't have said that.
Well, it's the debut of the new one on Stitcher. I think they pick up the rest of them anyway.
Oh, yeah. So. Okay.
Anyway, so... Yeah, so he did play for Young Boys, didn't he?
I'm sure he did. I'll take your word for it.
Okay. So, that on to Group C. United, they're not in trouble, but I think most people would have thought they'd be in a little bit of a stronger position than they are.
Yeah.
Sitting with 8 points, Benfica with 8 points. Slightly ahead on goal difference is Manchester United.
With Benfica to come to Old Trafford, though.
Yeah, it's true. It was 1-1 draw. Was it 1-1 draw?
Yeah, 1-1 in Portugal.
In Portugal. Winner of the United-Benfica match guaranteed a place in the last 16. A draw would take both through if...
Otsalul.
Galatz.
Yeah.
Is it Galatz?
Galatz.
Galatz.
Yeah.
Who are played four, lost four, scored one, conceded seven.
Oh, dear.
Not as bad as Villarreal, but
no.
Getting up there. So, United... Well,
it's United at home.
Yeah.
It'll be like the Galatz game. Probably unimpressive. Probably boring for long stages.
Basel are at home, right? This is interesting because Basel at home... Basel are away to
Galatz.
So if they win that...
Takes them to 8 points.
Takes them 8 points. Benfica have to play Galatz. United have to go to Switzerland, don't they?
They do. The day before Rooney goes to his appeal in Neon in Switzerland.
Well, it's nice he'll be in this vicinity.
They asked for it to be pushed 24 hours
It could
forward.
Be kind of, I'm in the neighbourhood, I just thought I'd drop by,
see
how the appeal's going.
It's like any time...
You did receive my appeal, didn't you?
When you're with someone and you always say to them, listen, any time, I'll be there tomorrow. It's just a turn of phrase. I don't...
And the receptionist
and then
going...
awkwardness.
Receptionist looks at him and goes, what's your name again? Takes us to Group D. So United and Benfica are going to go through, aren't they?
I think... Did I tip Basel to go through in that group? When we were having the predictions at the start.
If you did, you shouldn't have.
I don't mind Basel.
It's not that I've got anything against them. I just remember when
Benfica
they used to be...
certainly have the better individual players.
I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
When did it become Basel and stop being Baal?
Well, the thing is that it would be Baal if the L came after the S.
But it was Baal in the 60s.
Was it?
In the 70s, yeah. Always used to be you used to play Baal. You didn't play Basel.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so somewhere along the line. I was wondering if they changed their name.
Is this the same site that was around? And it is.
Honestly, it used to be Baal.
That's pretty funny, isn't it?
Yeah, well, these things happen.
Well, going by the fact that Manchester United used to be called Macclesfield Athletic.
Or Newton Heath,
yeah.
Basel have drawn their last three European away games, according to the information we have. And five of Basel's six goals this season have been scored by players called Fry.
Yeah, three of them in that game against Manchester United.
Okay. Which leads us to Group D, which, well, in terms of one place, it's down and dusted. Real Madrid, incredible. Played 4-1-4. Scored 10. Conceded 0.
You would have hoped.
0 and 12 points. They're through.
You would have said, yeah, they're 100% through. They've got that big letter Q next to their name. I would have expected them to score a couple more goals.
Well,
10 goals, 4 games.
Yeah.
But then it's group stages. You know, like,
they're
it's
playing
just,
Dinamo,
it's just about
home
there.
To Dinamo Zagreb. Zagreb actually gave them a little bit of a tough time in Zagreb.
That's true.
Before Real Madrid won, but. I can't see them giving them a tough time at the Bernabeu.
This is a race for second place.
It is, and quite interesting, because if Lyon go out, that would be considered a surprise, wouldn't it? A shock?
Well, mainly because Rémi Garde, who came in as their new coach at the start of the season, domestically,
and he's,
has
and
kind
he's,
of settled the ship a little bit.
And his brother? Rust Garde? Oh. Okay, sorry, hon. Let's get down to the serious stuff again.
Lee said about that, the better. Yeah, domestically, they're doing quite well. I mean, he came in to replace Claude Puel. A lot of pressure. People were writing them off.
They're doing better than Marseille.
That wouldn't be hard, though. I think everyone is.
Another defeat for Marseille. But they're doing okay in Europe. But that's getting into Wednesday games.
It is. And so we don't want to get in there.
Can't.
Interesting one. The side that goes out here, the side that finishes in third, be it Ajax or Lyon, maybe even Zagreb, who knows? We can't mathematically write them out.
Not mathematically out of it yet.
Sorry, to finish third, that is.
Yeah.
Decent shout for Europa League. Yeah. Ajax or Lyon.
Yeah. But it would be, Lyon have been so consistent over the years of getting out, being one, being in the Champions League. Number two, making it to the knockout stage. Now they've had trouble
and
pushing on from there.
Being eliminated by Real Madrid.
Yes. Although they have also eliminated Real Madrid at times. But the semi-final being the, from two seasons ago, the lone appearance that they had at the last four. I think they've had a couple of maybe quarter-finals, but mostly last 16.
Yeah.
But Ajax. Now, that maybe we'll finish off with this. Have you been following the Ajax saga with Van Gaal and Cruyff and the goings-on in the boardroom?
Well, Van Gaal's last job was with Bayern.
Yep.
Sacked, replaced by Houtkaikus. Yep. He disappeared for a little bit.
Went underground.
Yeah. And now he's reappeared.
Yeah, probably went underground because the story was that his payoff was based on him shutting up.
Yes. But now he's reappeared at his alma mater.
Yes.
But there's massive...
They took the vote when Cruyff wasn't there.
And this is for the position of...
Technical director. The one that Gus Hiddink was...
Gus
Hiddink was rumoured to be ready to accept. Of course, that's Gus Hiddink, now rumoured to be putting pressure on Vierge Boas at Chelsea. But anyway, back to Ajax. So, yeah, Cruyff is not happy. Rumours of... or stories of taped board meetings with things being said that probably should not be aired publicly regards to Edgar Davids.
Oh.
We're not going to get there. We'll let you follow that one up yourself. But all sorts of goings on, but the decision made when Cruyff was there. So the Cruyff return Ajax, which is being heralded as the moment where Ajax were going to be reincarnated, doesn't the best laid plans don't seem to be going too well there.
Yeah, it's like that.
It's funny, a bunch of Dutchmen arguing. That's so unusual.
It is, you know. Normally they're known as kind of quite passive people, and they don't like confrontation at all. But it's like that thing where, you know, Cruyff is heralded as coming back to Ajax, and you're like, it's like when your favourite band gets back together as a bunch of 65-year-olds.
But you know, I'm dying.
It's kind of like Rolling Stones. The Rolling Stones are brilliant. No, Mick Jagger looks like kind of Skeletor. maybe a vaguely more attractive version of it. There's a guy who's clearly just off his face playing lead guitar. And then you've literally got an 80-year-old playing your drums. I mean, it's just... How people? Did you see Rolling Stones live in concert last week? I was surprised that none of them dropped dead.
Can we go back to Ajax?
Go back to Ajax.
Because the one thing, there was a Patrick Vieira comment, and there's lots of comments about teams that are going to be like Barcelona, as if it's just a case of, we're going to be like Barcelona. You know, we're going to replicate the success of Barcelona, and not, you know, it's just so simplistically. So simplistic, it just drives me nuts when I read that stuff. But I'm dying to read the first person that tells me Cruyff going back to Ajax was part of a master plan to make Ajax like Barcelona.
Oh. You want Cruyff to Toronto FC? Fully implement the total football plans there. As director of football.
I guess I'd be ultimate Manchester City. Yes, we want to replicate the success of Toronto.
Yes, and also Johan Cruyff, an ex-star of the NASL, coming back to what he knows best. That'd be terrific, wouldn't it?
Oh,
and then people would just get to know how incredibly barmy Johan Cruyff is.
Well, some of the greatest...
That's Hey, listen, the distance between genius and insanity
is very,
is
very
measured
small.
Only by success.
Yes, very true.
Very true.
And with that, brilliant saying, brilliant comment from Owen, brings to an end our podcast. I'm Bobby McMahon, on behalf of Owen O'Callaghan and producer Luke Crawford, who is winging his way back from Los Angeles. Thank you for allowing us to be part of your day. And until the next time, goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Soccer Report Extra podcast. For more great soccer news, highlights, and analysis, watch the Fox Soccer Report every night at 10 p.m. Eastern on Fox Soccer and Fox Sports World Canada. And be sure to check out SoccerReportExtra.com daily for previews, opinions, and reviews. Music for this podcast provided by SoundJay.com.